Here's a look at our top stories this hour. Iran's top rights official dismisses a Swedish court ruling against Iranian national Hamid Nouri as unlawful, saying Tehran has several options on the table to respond. The Syrian military says it has intercepted a neo-Israeli strike on the capital, Damascus, shooting down most of the enemy's missiles. And Moscow says the latest round of EU sanctions on Russia's gold imports and its top lender will have devastating consequences for global economy and security. Hello and welcome. Your world news come to you live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. It's good to have you with us. Iran's top human rights official has denounced what he calls a contradictory behavior and double standard policies of some European countries toward the Islamic Republic. The secretary of Iran's High Council for Human Rights made the comment in protest at a Swedish court ruling against Iranian national Hamid Nouri. Qasem Gharibabadi called the verdict unlawful, saying Tehran will not sit idly by and has several options on the table to respond to. Gharibabadi said Sweden claims to be behaving based on mutual respect, but hosts and supports anti-Iran terror groups. Last week, a Swedish court sentenced Nouri to life in prison over alleged rights abuses against members of the Mujahideen Khalq organization known as the MKO in the 1980s. The MKO was a terror group responsible for thousands of deaths in Iran. Syrian media say Israel has conducted fresh missile strikes on the country, targeting areas in the outskirts of the capital, Damascus. The regime's reportedly fired missiles from the occupied Golan Heights. Syrian military sources have been quoted as saying that air defenses intercepted most of the incoming missiles. They say the attack left 3 soldiers dead, 7 more injured, and caused material damage. The Israeli regime frequently launches missile attacks on Syria, mainly targeting its military and resistance fighters battling foreign-backed terrorists. Syria has time and again denounced Israeli acts of aggression and lodged official complaints with the UN and other international bodies for violating its sovereignty. Damascus says it reserves the right to respond to the Israeli aggression. The Iranian president has hosted his Turkish and Russian counterparts for a summit on the crisis in Syria. As much as Syria was the focus of the gathering, there was another positive result to come out of the summit: how Iran, Russia, and Turkey can solve regional issues. One of the challenges discussed was how to convince Turkey not to pursue its military operation against Kurds in northern Syria. And that's what Iran leader conveyed to the Turkish president.
The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has advised the visiting Turkish president Recep Tayyip Erdogan against any aggression in northern Syria. Ayatollah Khamenei told Erdogan that any military action in northern Syria will definitely harm Turkey, Syria, and the entire region and will instead benefit terrorists. Ayatollah Khamenei described as very important the issue of Syria's territorial integrity and said a military incursion of Syria will only benefit terrorists. Ayatollah Khamenei further added that Iran considers security in Turkey and its border areas as its own. He called on Turkey to pursue a similar approach vis-a-vis its neighbor, Syria. For his part, President Erdogan accused the United States of feeding terrorist organizations in Syria. He further said Russia and Iran should support Turkish operations in Syria. Erdogan said Ankara believes Tehran and Moscow have the same opinion on Kurdish YPG militants operating in northern Syria.
Strategically, both Iran and Russia have taken the correct approach. They are focusing on the removal of the US threat first. And I think they believe they can deal with Mr. Erdogan after that. Because after all, his key pretext for intervening in Syria and trying to annex part of Syria is the threat from Kurdish separatists who are facing his troops south of the border there. At the moment, there's a collaboration with the Syrian army and the Kurdish separatists in some areas of the north of Syria.
In recent months, Turkey has been mauling a military operation in northern Syria against Kurdish militants that Ankara considers as terrorists. The militants are located in the cities of Tal Rifat and Manbij.
Effectively, there is some common ground there between Iran and Turkey in relation to the Kurdish proxies, which are being trained by Israel and by the US in the north of Iraq now. So the situation is complicated, but I think that, as I said, the priority of getting rid of the US occupation has to be recognised there, even though there are many people who are very concerned about the role Mr. Erdogan's been playing for many years now.
The Astana process has been an ongoing trilateral cooperation meant to solve the Syrian crisis that's been dragging on because of the U.S. and its allies' hostility against the Syrian government. Now, the only remaining parties that illegally remain in Syria are the U.S. and the terrorists. Damascus has accused Washington of plundering the Syrian nation's resources, including oil, while the Syrians are under U.S. sanctions. Meanwhile, Turkey has accused the U.S. of supporting terrorists. Iran has said the U.S. is a source of instability in Syria.
The meeting was followed by Syrian Foreign Minister Faisal Miqdad's visit to Tehran. Miqdad said Damascus will not tolerate the violation of its territorial integrity. Iran, Russia and Turkey have held a trilateral summit on the Syrian peace process. The summit was the seventh meeting of the Astana process. It was held on Tuesday in Tehran and attended by Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi, Russian President Vladimir Putin, and Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan.
В принятом совместном заявлении подтверждена приверженность укреплению трехстороннего сотрудничества России, Ирана и Турции в интересах достижения устойчивой и жизнеспособной нормализации ситуации в Сирийской Арабской Республике.
We all emphasize that we should combat terrorism, and there is the need to do so, and there is also a need for cooperation among all states. Today, terrorist currents have jeopardized the security of the region.
Raisi further slammed the U.S.'s unilateral sanctions on Syria. The sanctions have put additional pressure on the Syrian people and deprived them of the possibility of a normal life.
The primary focus, the priority has to be to get the US out of Syria and Iraq, by the way, because, of course, the use of terrorist groups is something that the US is the mastermind of, basically, and it's been behind ISIS and Al-Qaeda, all of those associated groups using the Saudis and so on.
And the biggest problem today, it was mentioned, the common will to fight international terrorism there, and also the foreign forces, meaning here the American forces and the others, that they should leave the Syrian territory.
The U.S. invaded Syria in 2014 after supporting terrorists in the country. Washington began stealing and smuggling the Syrian crude from the oil-rich eastern province of Deir al-Zor and elsewhere under former American President Donald Trump.
It was on July the 3rd, 1988, when the U.S. shot down an Iranian passenger plane and the Persian Gulf, killing all 290 civilians on board. Now, newly declassified files shed light on how the UK helped Washington cover up facts surrounding the tragedy that was one of the deadliest air incidents in decades. British website Declassified UK reveals that a meeting took place in 2000 between the then US National Security Advisor Colin Powell and the UK Foreign Secretary. In that meeting, Powell recalled a phone call from Downing Street that asked what the Americans wanted the British government to say. According to the website, the UK on various occasions also backed the US in its account of how the incident happened. At the time, the US said its warship mistakenly identified the Iranian civilian plane as a military one and fired two missiles at it. The US also said the warship had acted in self-defense after it sent warnings to the aircraft but got no response. The plane was en route from Tehran to Dubai when it was downed over Iran's territorial waters.
The U.S. brought on one of the deadliest disasters in aviation history 33 years ago on July the 3rd by shooting down an Iranian passenger plane. Iraner Flight 655 was en route from Tehran to Dubai. It was on its usual path when it was shot down by the U.S. Navy's guided missile cruiser USS Vincennes, killing all 290 passengers and crew members on board. 66 children were also among the victims. The then U.S. administration claimed that the crew of USS Vincennes had identified the Iranian Airbus A300 as an attacking F-14 Tomcat fighter. Vincent was traversing the Strait of Hormuz inside Iranian territorial waters, and at the time of the attack, Iraner Flight 655 was within Iranian airspace. Tehran declared the incident an international crime. It said even if the warship crew had mistaken the Airbus for an F-14, the tragedy was the result of the U.S. Navy's negligence and reckless behavior. Iran took its case to the International Court of Justice, but the case was settled out of the court in 1996 when the U.S. agreed to pay compensation. Washington maintained that the compensation was not a legal duty and was only based on an ex gratia. Although U.S. officials claimed the attack was a mistake, they never apologized to the Iranian nation and even awarded USS Vincent's commander, Captain William Rogers. He was awarded the Legion of Merit decoration for what was described as exceptionally meritorious conduct in the performance of outstanding as the commanding officer of the Vincent's. The citation made no mention of killing innocent civilians on Iraner 655. When the matter was taken to the United Nations Security Council in July 1988, then the U.S. Vice President George H.W. Bush defended the Vincent's crew's action. He said, given the situation, the officers in question had acted appropriately. Bush noted, "I will never apologize for the United States. I don't care what the facts are." Succeeding American officials took the same approach. Over three decades on, still no justice for the victims of the one of the deadliest incidents in aviation history.
Russia says the latest round of EU sanctions is illegitimate, warning that it would have devastating consequences for various segments of the global economy and security. The foreign ministry has accused the EU of continuing to, quote, drive itself into a dead end with enviable persistence. The new sanctions include a ban on importing gold from Russia and freezing the assets of the country's top lender, Sberbank. On Wednesday, EU diplomats agreed on a new round of sanctions over Moscow's military offensive in Ukraine. Russia's foreign ministry spokeswoman, Maria Zakharova, in a statement condemned the move, saying there is a huge gap between the EU's declared intentions and its actual behavior. The bloc has already imposed a wave of sanctions on Russia, targeting its key sectors. Ukraine and Russia are set to sign a Turkey-mediated deal that would allow Kiev to resume its Black Sea grain exports. Details of the agreement, due to be signed on Friday, were not immediately known. But the office of the Turkish president says a general agreement was reached on a UN-led plan during talks in Istanbul last week. There was no immediate official confirmation from either Moscow or Kiev. Over 25 million tons of wheat and other stuff have been blocked in several Ukrainian ports by Russian warships and landmines planted by Ukraine itself to avert Russia's offensive. Russia and Ukraine are both major global wheat suppliers, but grain shipments have stalled since Russia launched its military operation against Kiev in February, an act which has fueled a global food crisis. As the contest to become Britain's next prime minister reaches its final stage, just two contenders are left to battle it out to become successor to the outgoing Boris Johnson. With the race developing quickly over the past week, Robert Carter explains what to expect next in this tense moment for UK politics.
Five rounds of voting by UK Conservative MPs have produced the final two candidates for party leader. It's now down to Tory party members to decide who will be the next leader of not just their own party, but the country too. The finalists, Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss, are lining up for their final showdown to become Boris Johnson's successor. The winner, set to be announced on September the 5th, following a vote among the 160,000 or so members. While members have been given a full month to vote, experience from past similar postal ballots suggests that many members will probably decide on who they want to vote for immediately, casting their ballots as soon as they get the chance to do so. So that means that the two candidates will have to rely on a rapid, hard-hitting initial start to their campaign in order to try and grab as many to their side as they possibly can.
The Conservative dogfight has raised concerns within Tory ranks that bitter divides are being exposed to the public, further damaging the party's overall image.
The comments made in the debates were really more personal in nature and really relating to people's performance and particular minutiae of policy. There aren't really substantial differences in the Conservative Party. There may be slight disagreements on, well, you shouldn't have put the taxes up, or you should have originally been a Leaver, but now they're all signed up to taking Britain through the Brexit process, which, contrary to some, is still continuing because there's unfinished business from leaving the European Union. But really the differences are slight and have been somewhat exaggerated.
The two candidates must now travel across the country and tackle questions from members. With the economy in crisis, party reputation on the rocks, and even greater issues with foreign policy, whoever wins will have serious work to do. Robert Carter, London.
I'll turn to Sri Lanka, where security forces have raided the main anti-government protest camp in the capital, Colombo, evicting activists gathered outside the president's office. Troops and police commandos in riot gear swooped in on the protesters hours before they were due to vacate the area themselves. Soldiers also removed barricades set up by protesters near the main gate of the office. The raid came a day after veteran politician Ranil Wickremesinghe was sworn in as the crisis at country's new president. He replaced Gotabaya Rajapaksa, who was forced to step down and flee the country amid protests over an unprecedented economic crisis earlier this month. The new president faces an uphill task of steering the country out of its worst crisis ever. In Sudan, one more protester has been killed by security forces after people took to the streets to call for an end to the military rule. Medical sources aligned with the protest movement say the protester was fatally shot in Omdurman, a city close to the capital, Khartoum. That brings to 115 the number of people killed during protests against a coup led by Army Chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan in October last year. The putsch ousted a civilian group that was tasked with forming an interim administration. Earlier this month, Burhan took a surprise move and vowed to make room for a new transitional government. The pledge was met with skepticism by critics, including the main civilian bloc known as the Forces for Freedom of Change. Sudan has been in the grip of unrest since the ouster of longtime ruler Omar al-Bashir in 2019.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The current corporate capitalism is a legacy of the slave system. In the name of freedom, the exploitation of those below, the concentration of wealth, the sacralization of the masters, entrepreneurs, and the demonization of the workers' slaves, says George Matchfood, writer, in an article published under the heading, The Great Crisis of the 21st Century, Hijacked Democracies, Propaganda and Rebellions. Stay tuned for more. Professor Walter Schiedel, in his book The Great Leveler, showed more than convincingly that from prehistory to the present day, all the socioeconomic systems known to humanity tended towards inequality and ended in global catastrophes. The first is quite obvious, and we are seeing it today. Those who have financial and economic power have inflamed political power, which produces a snowball effect. The rich and their corporations are the big donors to the political parties in the U.S. and then write in the laws at their convenience. In 1971, a classic of political comics, The Wizard of the Eye, summed it up best. The golden rule is that he who has the gold makes the rules. In 2013, the French philosopher Thomas Piketty wrote his acclaimed book, Capital in the 21st Century, in which he argued that, to a large extent, the growth of inequality is due to the fact that the wealth of the rich based on stock of all assets grew faster than the economy and the income of the rest, that is, faster than the wages of those who struggle to survive. But inequality is not only economic, it is also racial, sexual, religious, ideological, and cultural. For generations, societies, including the U.S. society, has debated the meaning of social inequality and whether this is good or bad. One of the conservative hypotheses, since they never reached the category of theories, was based on justifying inequality as a natural consequence of prosperity. In a tribe or in ancient times, the differences were never as great as in U.S. society. Hence, the idea that prosperity comes from inequality or inequality is a necessary thing and inevitable consequence of prosperity prevailed. Never before have the poor been less poor than today in the U.S. And Americans have to thank capitalism and the rich for all this. This show of radical ignorance is the banner of libertarians and neoliberals, missionaries against the intervention of governments, of their regulations and their taxes, and the social and economic livestock of the people. Ironically, they have the U.S. corporations as their ideological model, whose prosperity, like Europe's, was built on slavery and by the force of brutal imperial interventions by governments and their secret agencies on the rest of humanity. Nor do they see corporations as dictatorships in the way of fiefdoms, war in Middle Ages and banana republics more recently. Mere myths. Where is it shown that prosperity comes from the accumulated wealth of the rich? Why not see that development and wealth are products of humanity based on the accumulated experience and knowledge of the millenary human history? Another dogma of today's world lies in a misreading of Adam Smith himself, according to whom all social progress is based on the ambition and selfishness of the individual. Hence the social myth according to which progress and prosperity are based on the ambition of individuals to be millionaires, which is why there is no need to punish success with taxes. A popular but cheap myth. If we consider that all the progress, all or almost all the technical, scientific, and social inventions recorded in history, even in the capitalist age, have been made by people who were not thinking about the money. And social myths do not come from the people. They come from power. Yes, the Industrial Revolution multiplied wealth and inequality a hundredfold, but you can't separate three elements of brutal Euro-American imperialism. If South America had plundered the rest of the world for centuries, today it would be a model of progress and development. The fact that today the poor are less poor than yesterday is not proof of the benefits of capitalism. Since humanity has been making progress for millennia, and all at an accelerated rate. No technical or scientific progress is not due to capitalism or the capitalists. The millionaires just kidnapped them. The current corporate capitalism is a legacy of the slave system. In the name of freedom, the exploitation of those below, the concentration of wealth, the sacralization of the master's entrepreneurs, and the demonization of the workers' slaves. At this moment, capitalism is bringing nothing but existential problems, such as the destruction of the planet by dint of growth based on consumption and destruction and aggravation of social differences, which will lead to greater conflicts. Capitalism is exhausted, and the crisis lies in denying the socialization of human progress, which will be inevitable after the breakdown with massive robotization and development of AI. To suggest that the problem of inequality be solved with handouts is like fighting an infection with aspirin. Instead of being cured, the infection increases. The breakdown could be avoided by global agreement, but if sanity were not a rare commodity, we would not be drowning in an environmental crisis now. The alternative is a global collapse, a dystopian situation where all the laws accepted today as dogmas, such as the value of the dollar and of private property, are broken. A collapse where there are no winners, but a definitive regression to the Middle Ages. If in a town there were kids dying of hunger and someone happened to light a cigarette with a $100 bill, it would be described as immoral. Well, that's the situation today. That is to say that we are in the first level of three. Number one, moral. It is immoral that children die of hunger in a super rich and hyper technological world. Basic needs covered would be the first step of a humanistic civilization. Number two, injustice. Then there would be the discussion of the injustice of what falls to each one and based on what reason. And number three, convenience. A less relevant discussion is about the necessity or convenience of inequity. For many of Americans, equity favors development and even the production of wealth. Growth as a precondition for any redistribution is a dogma created by power. The super rich are the enemies of humanity. Not only do they kidnap wealth from the rest, they do not only monopolize politics in democracies and dictatorships, but they keep them in a state of hypnosis through the great propaganda media, the media of distraction, toxic fun, and fragmentary, and by virtue of keeping millions of other humans in a state of need, as wage slaves with no time to think that their brothers and neighbors are not the pirates. But a large part of humanity loves, admires, and desires the super rich, as the slaves love the masters who threw a potion at them at the end of an exhausting day. The master and the potion were received as a blessing, and the rebels as the demons who wanted to turn the world upside down.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear listeners, and let us enlighten our minds and souls with a bezel of wisdom from the Holy Prophet's first infallible successor, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib. Peace be upon him. He who is deserted by friends and relatives will often find help and sympathy from strangers.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Principles of Friendship. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dear listeners, my name is Hussein Hinzano. And today's lesson, or today, we are going to talk about a very important lesson, and that is principles of friendship. Now, today, I would like to touch or to talk about something very important. And the topic of this thing is how to choose friends. How are we supposed to be choosing our friends? What is the right method to use while we are choosing our friends? Now, mostly your friend expresses your personality. And when people understand the personality of your friend, when people understand how your friend acts, how your friend's habits, they automatically know who you are. They automatically know what kind of a person you are from them knowing your friend. And likewise, when they understand you, when they understand who you are, they will definitely know the personality of your friend. A proverb says, someone's friend is his partner in his intellect. What does this mean? It means that whenever you have a friend, that particular friend reflects to what your intellect looks like, reflects to how your thoughts are, reflects to how your habits can be. Now, man loves those who come closer to him and share with him in good morals and thoughts. It is in view of this that the Holy Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, says, man is on the religious path of his friend. Therefore, you should look into those whom you want to take as friend. Therefore, friendship is a psychological and intellectual channel that connects people and their behaviors. The moment you have a friend, definitely the behaviors of that friend are going to reflect on your behaviors. So we need to be choosing friends in a way that we should know that whenever I choose this friend, it will reflect on my behavior. We need to be careful on this. Allah, 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 Allah.
IB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
Welcome back. You're listening to A2Z program from IRB English Radio. We are talking about principles of friendship. And I was talking about a very important thing, and that was how to choose a friend. And we said that the best way for you to choose your friend is for you to consider one thing first, to know that the friend that you're choosing, the friend that you're bringing into your life, is the person that is going to reflect your thoughts, is going to reflect your habit, is going to reflect your way of life. So by choosing a good friend means that you have good habits, you have good traits, you have good intellect, and so on and so forth. Now, the Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has outlined a few things with regards to choosing friends. The Almighty Allah says, and this is definitely in the chapter 3, verse 1 or 3 in the Holy Quran. He says, and remember Allah's favor on you when you were enemies. Then he united your hearts, so by his favor you became brethren. That's one of the sayings. Another saying from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in chapter 8, verse number 63. Allah says, if you had spent all that is in the earth, you could not have united their hearts, but Allah united them. What are we trying to say here? That the psychoanalysis of the brotherhood and love between people is based on faith and sound links. Is the real friendship without the least deceptions of trickery. So, the social experiences and analysis conducted by experts on crime shows that bad friends are not real friends, rather they are enemies. Definitely this means if your friend is a bad person, then that particular friend is your enemy, because that particular friend makes you to be bad, portrays you to be a bad person intellectually, physically, socially, and even in terms of religion. So many a time, this type of friendship creates different forms of calamities on innocent personalities due to their relation with bad friends or friendships. Thereby, they themselves turn into criminals. And indeed, the Holy Quran has touched on this thing and has said that we need to be careful while we are choosing friends, because they reflect on who we are. Thank you so much for listening. Till next episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A2Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/en-islam-page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news, with delight.
Summer heat is here and zoos are working to not only keep visitors cool, but animals safe during the hot weather. A Belgian zoo takes extra precautions to help animals survive a fierce heat wave that has left Western Europe sweltering. Pyridaza Zoo, located in Wallonia in the province of Hainaut, provides animals with frozen food, fruit suspended in water, and extra showers. It has also created extra shaded areas with good ventilation along with water points to ensure animals have access to them. Zookeepers say managing animals in high temperatures requires good forward planning. Zoos across the world have a variety of responses to keep animals cool. So we humans are not the only creatures who feel significant stress during the hot months. Animals, too, are impacted by it. The biggest and brightest supermoon of 2022 has risen with a crimson hue above horizons across the globe. It's also known as a buck moon because it falls in July. The name does not come from its appearance. You won't see the shape of a deer on the moon's surface or anything. It refers to something that happens in nature at this time. It's called a buck moon because the antlers of male deer or bucks are in full growth in July. Supermoons occur when a full moon comes closest to Earth in its orbit. This is not the last supermoon of 2022. There will be another in August, marking the final supermoon in this year's set of four. Some rescue stories are tragic, but this one has a happy ending. A stranded elephant and her calf have been pulled out of a drainage hole in a dramatic rescue mission during monsoon rains in Thailand. The mother elephant was guarding her calf that had fallen into a golf course drain hole when rescuers arrived. Vets had to use tranquilizers to subdue the frantic mother, but on her way down, she hit her head on a concrete block, knocking her unconscious as she fell into the muddy cavity. Rescuers used a crane to lift her out. It took two men jumping up and down on her chest to resuscitate her. Meanwhile, a digger was brought in to move the muddy earth and create a ramp for the calf to climb out. It took the team more than 3 hours to finish the operation. During a routine X-ray examination of one of Van Gogh's paintings, art conservators at the National Galleries of Scotland have discovered a secret self-portrait.
When we saw the X-ray for the first time, of course, we were hugely excited, absolutely thrilled to bits. Such a major discovery of an alternative composition happens once, twice in a conservator's lifetime.
The self-portrait was found during an examination of an 1885 painting by Van Gogh as the museum was prepping for an upcoming exhibition on Impressionism. Hidden from view for over a century, the self-portrait is on the reverse side of the Dutch artist's painting called The Head of a Peasant Woman. It was found beneath cardboard and layers of glue. Van Gogh is known to have often reused his canvases, working on their reverse side as well.
When he took the painting to Paris, he didn't have very much money. He was scrabbling around and decided clearly to use the back of these series of paintings that he'd brought with him from the Netherlands to Paris to explore self-portraiture for the first time.
Experts at the museum believe the materials covering the self-portrait were applied in the early 20th century before the art went on display. Art historians say when Vincent van Gogh was low on money, he took to painting on both sides of his canvases, but over the years, some of his reverse side paintings were covered up and lost. The X-ray image will feature at the Royal Scottish Academy in Edinburgh starting in July.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Children in Qatar are helping a conservation program revive the population of a critically endangered species of turtles. The children help release the baby turtles after they hatch, which usually takes place during the dark hours of the evening. The hawksbill mothers are cared for, if needed, when they arrive at the beach to lay their eggs. When the little turtles emerge, the weaker ones are taken to facilities at the foundation. There, they are cared for until they are strong enough to be returned to sea. Program managers say getting children involved helps raise awareness about the endangered species and how they can help prevent some of the challenges these turtles face.
As adults, we are kind of beyond hope. Our brain is no longer plastic. We can't really learn new things. But children have the power to really internalize all these things that they're learning, that they're seeing. They make these habits part of their life. They make decisions based on, is it good for the environment, alongside with economic value for money kind of decisions. And this is what we want to cultivate.
The children also get a chance to form bonds with the hawksbill turtles. Some of them have even named the one they are going to release. That's why life experts with the conservation program say only 1% of every 1,000 hatchlings make it to adulthood. Poaching, climate change, fishing nets and marine pollution have all contributed to the dwindling numbers of the species. The program was launched roughly a decade ago and has released 30,000 hatchlings into the sea in the last 5 years. Experts are optimistic about the success of the program.
The more scientists make progress in space exploration, the more they get persuaded to delve into the mysteries of the universe. Now, the release of stunning full-color images from deep in the cosmos has put astronomers on the edge of their seats. NASA has unveiled high-resolution pictures from its James Webb telescope, which is the largest space-based observatory ever launched. The images took 2 weeks to render from raw telescope data. The $9 billion infrared James Webb was launched on Christmas in 2021. It reached its destination in solar orbit nearly 1 million miles from Earth a month later. Then the telescope underwent months-long process to unfurl all of its components. James Webb is now finely tuned and fully focused. The telescope is expected to shed light on the life cycles on planets of planets and galaxies.
The International Fajr Fashion and Clothing Festival has drawn fashion designers from Iran and around the world. The designs displayed are trendy and at the same time they conform to the Islamic dress code. Yusuf Jalali has this report.
It's the Iranian fashion's biggest day. The 11th Fajr Fashion and Clothing Festival brought under one roof fashion designers from across Iran and some other Muslim nations to step up their designs.
I have participated here as a fashion designer. I am so happy to be a part of this event because it acts as a platform that links designers to producers and it helps like promote quality design in the market.
This festival is a major event in the Islamic world's fashion industry because it helps promote fashionable clothes that conform to Islamic guidelines.
A typical Iranian woman wears a button-up coat called manto and a scarf covering the head. Some others wear a piece of cloth called chador, which covers the body from head to toe. One of the challenges Iranian fashion designers have to deal with is to tailor their designs to Islamic dress code or hijab while keeping them trendy.
Clothes represent the identity of a nation. As a designer, my mission is to design clothes that best represent the dresser's nationality and their culture. At the same time, the aesthetic aspect of the garment needs to catch the attention. I think this is an ultimate artistry if accomplished.
Smuggling is another persisting problem in the Iranian clothing industry. Out of the $8 billion annual turnover of Iran's garment industry, a whopping $5 billion is supplied through smuggling, say activists here. Experts say one of the reasons smuggling has the lion's share in Iran's clothing market is that it's more cost-effective to import foreign clothes rather than produce them domestically.
We are making our best efforts to push down the production costs, including the associated taxes, in order to promote designs that reflect our Islamic and Iranian identities, opposed to Western designs that seek to dominate global markets.
With all the actors in Iran's fashion industry present in the Fajr Festival, the event is seen as a place to highlight and address the challenges, with the aim to provide the stage for Iranian fashion activists to shine in the domestic market.
It might seem contradictory when we would associate fashion with the Islamic dress code, but it's the art of a fashion designer that sews traditions to style and designs clothes that are both stylish and hijab. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Elephants are the largest living animals on Earth that, in many cultures, are associated with good luck, wisdom and fertility. But their overpopulation has become a matter of concern in the southeastern African nation of Malawi.
We want to reduce the population of elephants in this park, in Luanda National Park, because currently we have 600 plus elephants in this park. We would be comfortable, ecologically speaking, that is, to have 300 elephants in this park.
Officials say they will relocate 250 elephants from a national park in a southern town to another park by the end of July. They say the plan is part of a national conservation initiative to maintain healthy habitats in the country's national parks. Establishing viable elephant populations and ensuring the prosperity of local communities around the parks are said to be the other aspects. Residents say the elephants often stray into their gardens and damage their crops. Authorities had relocated some 300 elephants from the same town in 2019.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Over 1,100 people have died in Spain and Portugal from heat-related causes recently as an unprecedented heat wave moves through Europe. The ongoing heat wave could last a total of several weeks and has been accompanied by wildfires in France, Spain, and Portugal, facing thousands of people to flee their homes. Please stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Brett Wilkins, journalist. This article is published under the heading, More Than 1,000 Die as Record-Breaking Heat and Wildfires Scorch Europe. Here's the story. Record-breaking heat has killed over 1,000 people in Western Europe over the past week, while firefighters battle to contain blazes scorching Suaves of three countries amid a worsening climate emergency, officials said recently. El País reports heat killed 360 people in Spain between July 10th and July 15th. This follows the heat-related death of more than 800 people last month, according to the Spanish government's Carlos III Health Institute. Madrid Barajas International Airport recorded an all-time high temperature of 108 degrees Fahrenheit recently, while some Spanish municipalities registered highs of 110 degrees Fahrenheit to 113 degrees Fahrenheit. One 60-year-old Madrid sanitation worker collapsed in the middle of the street while working recently. The man was rushed to the hospital with a body temperature of over 106 degrees Fahrenheit and died of heat stroke. He was one of the 123 people who suffered heat-related deaths recently in Spain. In drought-ravaged Portugal, where temperatures soared to over 116 degrees in Pinhão, the health ministry said 659 people, most of them elderly, have died from heat-related causes over the past week. In Britain, the UK Met Office recently issued its first-ever red extreme heat warning when an exceptional hot spell is expected to hit the country. AccuWeather senior meteorologist Tyler Roy said there is concern that this heat could become a long-duration heat wave lasting into August in places including the valleys of Hungary, eastern Croatia, eastern Bosnia, Serbia, southern Romania, and northern Bulgaria. Parts of Africa, the West Asia region, and Central Asia are also suffering heat waves and wildfires. Meanwhile, more than 10,000 people in France, Spain, and Portugal have been evacuated as firefighters battle out-of-control wildfires burning throughout parts of those countries. More than half of Portugal is on red alert status as firefighters work to contain 14 separate conflagrations. According to the Associated Press, Hungary, Croatia, and the Greek island of Crete have also fought wildfires this week, as have Morocco and California. Italy is in the midst of an early summer heat wave coupled with the worst drought in its north in 70 years, conditions linked to a recent disaster when a huge chunk of Marmolada Glacier broke loose, killing several hikers. Scorching temperatures have even reached northern Europe. An annual four-day walking event in the Dutch city of Nijmegen announced recently that it would cancel the first day scheduled when temperatures are expected to peak at around 39 degrees Celsius, 102 degrees Fahrenheit. Studies have shown that the human-driven climate emergency is increasing the frequency and severity of heat waves.
Saudi ties with the United States. Part 3.
We'll move on classified pages detailing alleged ties of the Saudi Arabian government to the 9/11 hijackers have now been released by Congress.
They confirm what many have suspected all along, that the 9/11 hijackers...
15 years after the 9/11 attacks, the U.S. government finally released a long-classified parts of an official report on an inquiry into its intelligence community activities before and after the attacks. Those parts were 28 out of hundreds of pages that provided details about the incident and results of the inquiry. According to these 28 pages, a number of officials of the Saudi Embassy in Washington and its affiliated institutes had close ties with people